And sadly, it is starting to look like Jill Stein will not be elected president of these United States.
Hey, 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 hey! Spoilers!
And neither will Vermin Supreme!
Ugh.
Howard the Duck's still in the race, though.
Good.
Back in 96. Back in 76.
I have friends.
Once again, to Crazy Comics and Stories, it's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires we call the internets is Joe Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
I am gentle and effective.
What?
Well, I mean, in my original peppermint scent. I'm just, of course, referring to the wonderful product from one of our sponsors, One Wipe Charlie's, the flushable moist wipe. They feature a strong yet soft and flushable cloth wipe with a gentle and effective cleansing solution. Botanical ingredients, aloe vera, they're naturally soothing, while refreshing cucumber and a peppermint scent leaves you feeling clean. Vitamin E leaves the skin naturally hydrated. And it's easy to use. Remove, wipe gently, dispose of in a trash receptacle, and use a trash receptacle. Because, you know, when you flush these things down the toilet, they tend to meet up with other disposable wipes, and they just form a giant snot ball that clogs the sewer. Then our poor sewer worker has to go in and pull this giant glob of refuse out of the system, else it back up. So, folks, when you're enjoying your One Wipe Charlie's, just throw them out.
So that's what you've been up to for the last week.
Well, pretty much the day. And breaking kayfabe, this is our, 17th?
Fourth.
I thought it was 17th attempt.
Fourth.
At, over 48 hours. Not only did we push into Election Day, but we're doing it here while the nation is counting its votes and electing. And we'd like to thank you for electing to listen to us. We know you have many podcasts for which to choose for your listening pleasure.
None of them are half as good, though.
No, that's true. Especially since, aren't we the longest episodic running podcast?
We are.
Yes.
We are the longest running episodic podcast in the world and a national treasure.
Hang on, I got to use my One Wipe Charlie here. There we go. Get that gunk off the table. Okay. Gets kind of deep around here.
We are a national treasure.
So, while I'm busy working the new Creotron 8000, I understand the Solitaire Rose compound got themselves a new a system to play with.
Yes, yesterday, I will get to it with the freaking, but The old Strodetron 2000
and
gave up the ghost.
The previous 1000, which didn't work.
The Strodetron 2000 gave up the ghost.
Yep.
And we attempted to move over to the laptop.
Which is the 1000.
No, that's the 3000.
No, the way it acted, it was the 1000.
Yeah, it kept dropping the Skype call. And I have no idea why.
I don't think it was. Yeah, I never think it's a computer. Something with Skype. I don't know.
It could be, but we're not having a problem with this one.
Nope.
But now we have the Strodetron 8000.
Ooh, see, isn't it great?
Ahead.
Yeah, see, I did too. I went right to the 8 myself.
So, all new system. And here's the beautiful thing, because...
Same old podcast.
No, it's a brand new podcast.
Well, yeah, but same old, crusty creators like you and
same
I.
Same old host. But
yeah.
But no, it's a new world. It's a new podcast. It's all new. Same theme song.
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
Because Joe wanted to change the theme song a while back, and
hell yeah,
people rebelled.
silly.
They want us to continue to record this podcast on Bad Street USA.
I promise if you do get something out of the Cray accumulation of crap, I will not include a one wipe Charlie. Or maybe I will. These are damn fine wipes. They come individually packaged, too.
Yeah, so you can take them to work.
So, and not tested on animals.
Well, they're one up on me.
Another smart product by Dollar Shave Club, www.dollarshaveclub.com. But we'll get to that later. Corey and I both went and saw that there Doctor der Stranger movie, yeah?
Yeah, we saw the Doctor of Strange.
Yep, yep, yep.
Wait, that's not right. Nope. Doctor Strange.
With an O in it, not the O.
The Master of Black Magic.
Ooh, he's a black magic woman. No, that's not right either. What did you think of the movie, Herr Strode?
I enjoyed it. I saw it in the IMAX 3D,
ooh,
and the visual effects were amazing in IMAX 3D. I have pretty much stopped going to 3D movies because a lot of them, they add the 3D afterward. They're not filmed in 3D. And while this one wasn't filmed in 3D, they did film a lot of it in IMAX. And the visual effects were amazing. A lot of reality folding in on itself. There was a sequence where Doctor Strange was fighting in the mirror dimension. And it was visually one of the coolest things I've seen since the movie Inception. Absolutely loved it. The plot was very much a Marvel origin plot, and while there were some things I quibble with, I really enjoyed it, and at the end of the movie it said Doctor Strange will return, and I will tell you, it can't return fast enough. I enjoyed this almost as much as I enjoyed Guardians of the Galaxy. Joe?
I was drunk.
Well, it's about time somebody picked up that baton.
Yep, yep. My buddy and I, we got together a couple weeks ago and bought tickets in advance, and we went to the same place. Well, we've gone to a few movies at this place. I'm trying to think what the last movie we saw together there at the St. Louis Park Theater there.
We saw Deadpool there.
That's what it was. I couldn't remember what that was. We stopped at a restaurant down the block, and for the life of me, the name of it eludes me at the moment, but we had it, got ourselves good and hammered, and of course the only real complaint we had was when we got in line for concessions. We got together, we got there about 11:30, we drank till about 1, and then we figured, okay, well, movie starts in 20 minutes, we'll walk over, get the concessions. They had one poor schleb working the concessions, and that boy was sweating up a storm, and he by the time I think we got in line about 1 o'clock, it was about 1:19 by the time we got forward to get our popcorn, and I continued my drink-a-thon with some hard apple cider, and of course we got upstairs just in time to catch the previews, so that was pretty cool. Movie itself, a lot of fun, enjoyed it thoroughly. My buds liked it.
Did you see it in 3D?
Nope, we decided not to, because being that everybody in our party wears glasses, we thought of wearing the 3D glasses on top just wasn't worth the extra money to do it. Plus, they make you give you back the 3D glasses. I much prefer to drive home in them and pretend I'm drunk. But, and they recycle them. That's kind of gross. Anyways, we did enjoy it. My buddy, of course, having drank quite a lot, bailed right after the credits started. But he did get stopped at the end because, as you know, there's always scenes in the Marvel movie. And in this case, they had two of them. And then he went and came back. And, of course, me, I just hung out to the very end. And as soon as that last credit hit and I saw the ending scene, I was out of there. I would have liked to talk to the two 65-year-old women in front of us as to why they were catching the Doctor Strange movie. For all I know, they could have been some of the original Steve Ditko groupies. Or, Monday's the night for movies. You know, everybody's saying this is the number one movie of the weekend. I'm always curious because as lost into infinity as Corey and I did our previous podcast, we were talking, theorizing about why people see movies and what they think. I'm always curious to see what a non-comic person thinks about a comic book movie. I mean, you and I, we caught all the little glimpses and the eggs and things like that. But I'm always curious to see, you know, like with my dad and my wife, who aren't really comic fans, if they enjoyed the movie, if they could follow it, if they were, you know, eager, if they were going to, you know, see a sequel or not. And if they saw the other Marvel movies, you know, are they all doing it, tying it together? Or are they just, yeah, or like myself, you know, last one I saw was Civil War. Did not see Iron Man 3, did not see Ant-Man yet, haven't seen the Hulk movie. And they all take place in some grand tapestry and, you know, better geeks than us have put together when they occur. But I was curious, Corey, where the big thing, of course, we're all leaning towards is the Avengers war. I don't know if it's part one, part two, or what they are. You know, I see it both ways. But we know there's six Infinity Gems or stones, as they are called in the Marvel movie. Which ones have we seen and where are they?
We have seen all but the Soul Gem. Let's see, the original was the Tesseract, which is currently in Asgard.
Yeah, supposedly one of Odin's crown jewels.
Let's see, one of the Red Gem was also in Thor.
What did they call that? Aether?
Aether? I would have to look. I don't remember these.
I think it's
I know them in the comics.
Yeah. Well, screw the comics. This is the movie. Get with the 21st century. We're into moving pictures now.
This is a comic book podcast, you know.
So they said, yeah, well, then we're just doing it audially. Audially, audially. Winter Soldier had, Strucker was doing something with one of the stones. That's what led to Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch. That was the, I can't say it, Chitauri?
Yep, the Chitauri. Let's see, the Space Stone is the Blue Stone. That was housed in the Tesseract. The Mind Stone is the Yellow Stone. It was the one that Loki had in his scepter, and now Vision has it in his forehead.
And Guardians of the Galaxy had an orb energy. Orb
yes, that
was found.
That was the Power Stone. The Reality Stone is the Red Stone. It's called the Aether, and it's collected by the Collector in Thor the Dark World. And let's see, the Time Stone is the Eye of Agamotto. And I actually had one of my friends who doesn't really read the comics that much, used to, message me and said, has the Eye of Agamotto always been a Infinity Gem? And I said, no, it's just in the movies. And in the comics, it was long before the Infinity Gem showed up.
Cool.
Because the Infinity Gems were a creation of... Come on, Joe, you know this.
I'm sorry, I'm looking, trying to figure out where that seventh one is from the Ultraverse.
It was Jim Starlin created the gems.
And he was stoned.
Well, yeah.
So it all ties together.
The first soul gem was actually in Warlock. It was one of Warlock's powers. And then Starlin's the one who created more gems. And they all appeared for the first time in the Thanos War storyline in the Avengers of Marvel 2-in-1 annual, which is one of my favorite comic stories of all time, which was the death of Warlock.
He got better.
He got better. It was also death of Thanos.
We don't want people worrying about stuff. That's why we told you at the beginning of this show that Corey's... what do you call it? The Strotron
8000
is functioning. So when we get to freaking and you find out that the 4000 gave up the ghost, you're not worrying too much because you already know how it ends. It ends happily.
Yes.
Well, you've got to pay for it though, but you know.
Well, that's fine. It wasn't that terrible.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed the movie. One of the things, Joe, you've talked in about the two older women who saw the movie. When I worked at a movie theater, one of the reasons that they had afternoon shows, older people go to the movies on the weekdays because it's cheaper, there's no crowds, and they would just come to the theater and go, what have we not seen yet? And as long as it wasn't like a slasher movie, they'd go see it. Didn't matter what it was. It was just, hey, we just go to the movies. We see everything. Me, I'll do the same thing when I retire, except it'll be, oh, look, it's Turner Classic Movies. I'm just going to put it on and leave it on for the rest of my life.
Cool.
So, Doctor Strange, big thumbs up. Really enjoyed it. I don't know if I'll see it in the theater again, but this is one I'm going to buy the DVD pretty quick. And the only real trailer that I saw that excited me was, well, there were two. There was the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer and the Rogue One trailer. The rest of the other trailers were just kind of, I didn't care.
See, we got three trailers. Guardians of the Galaxy, Wonder Woman, which was odd because, again, Disney flicks being advertised, or I guess a Time Warner flick being advertised during a Disney movie doesn't usually do that. But my guess is the theater probably just said, hey, we got comic fans, just run the comic movies. We also got the Power Ranger one. All these I've seen already online, so, you know, it was kind of cool to see them big, but they didn't really... you know, give us all that much more.
So there was some comic news that happened.
There was.
Yeah, the first I have unbelievable schadenfreude about. Joe, do you know what schadenfreude is?
Not in public.
Schadenfreude is a German word because the Germans have more words for pain than the Eskimos have for snow.
Got a word for everything, those crafty crouch.
It's a feeling of glee at another person's misfortune.
Which is ironic on election night as we record this.
I'm just going to read the headline. Wizard World sues Stephen Sheamus for $1 million.
Million!
Stephen Sheamus was the chief marketing officer of Wizard World, was the brother of Wizard founder Garib Sheamus. And let's see here. I'm just going to read it, where, according to the lawsuit, Sheamus was in charge of relation with nerd celebrities, or nerd celebrities, and negotiated money-losing deals with celebrities who appeared at Wizard Worlds, seeking to get guests who would have the more valuable autographs at any cost, causing Wizard World to lose even more money, according to the lawsuit. The situation appears to have been brewing for a while, since Sheamus produced a 2011 letter of employment from his brother Garib, who'd founded Wizard, and demanded to be paid according to its terms. According to the suit, the letter is fraudulent, and when the current Wizard management took exception, Stephen tried to delete all of his company emails.
Again with the emails.
Sheamus was fired from the company on October 27th, and on the same day, his brother Kenneth Sheamus resigned from the board. The documents are available online. It is also possible, and this is the thing that I get off the beat, aside from the salacious neighbor of the suit, it is possible that the high fees Sheamus negotiated may have had an effect on the entire celebrity market. What they're saying is he overpaid these celebrities to do autographs and stashed a bunch of their autographs to sell for himself later. Now, one of the things that I did not know, that Garib Sheamus, who was removed from involvement after... he resigned in 2011. He's actually making a name for himself as a fine artist, has nothing to do with comics or conventions at all anymore. But his brother was kind of using the convention to line his own pockets, according to this lawsuit. Now, we had an episode a few weeks ago about how celebrities are carrying home bags of money. I wonder if that's going to slow down a little bit now.
Well, you never know.
But looks like all of the Sheamus brothers are now gone from Wizard, and they're still weasels. They're still scum. There's still a hive of scum and villainy.
Yeah, pretty much.
They still are dropping themselves into Minneapolis the weekend before the Minneapolis convention and on Free Comic Book Day, so the local dealers hate them with a passion of a thousand fiery suns. And We talked a lot about the whole celebrity autograph market being, because there's so much money flowing into it, it's being looked at, and I think this is the first casualty of that.
Not that we're weeping anything.
I've said before, the only autographs I get are for comic creators on the books that they created that meant a lot to me. I don't need Norman Reedus's autograph.
Oh, I do.
Although I may cosplay at some point in the future. Joe,
well,
I may cosplay.
Not gonna happen.
Do you know who I will cosplay as? Because I actually, if I drop about 30 pounds, could look the role.
Oh, this ought to be rich.
And I've already got the outfit.
Uh-huh.
Negan.
That's already been done.
So what? Every cosplay's been done. Deadpool's been done, and people still dress up like Deadpool.
Nope, been done. Sorry, by the time you get it, by the time you actually go to a con, say, for example, MSP Comic Con 2017, May 20th and 21st, at the Minnesota State Grandstand, and, of course, advance tickets will go on sale starting January 1st at www.mcbacomiccons.com. Megan will be old news.
Joe, I'm not going to cosplay at a convention. I'm not going to conventions anymore. I'm just going to cosplay at work.
No, doesn't matter. Doesn't count. If it's not at a con, it's not cosplay. It's just being weird.
And
of course, if you dress for the job you want, I'd be Batman.
Hey, if I can dress for the job I want, Negan looks like he's got a pretty good job.
Yeah, but you know how he ends up in the book. I don't know why you want to be him.
As Rick's second in command?
Bedridden? Yeah, sure, why not?
No, he's second in command.
Shh, don't spoilers! Don't be giving away shit. This is Corey Spoiler Strode telling you everything.
Trump
is going to win.
Spoilers are only good for a month.
Sandman ends on the last page.
No, it doesn't. They keep putting out new miniseries.
Including Amazon.
Anytime Neil Gaiman says, yeah, I think I need a couple $1 million. I got another story. You got an artist that wants to work with me?
I got bored. I got you another one. I got bored.
The other comic news that I wanted to talk about, there is a new Tilting at Windmills column over at Heidi McDonald's website, The Beat.
And Heidi, you really got to clean that place up. I went to look to try to find this one, and all I could find was Tilting at Windmills from August. And then by Googling, I was able to find October. And then after that, Corey finally sent me the link to the one in November that we're actually going to be talking about. So, yeah, it's not pretty. You really need to do something a little better here.
Yeah, it's still better than Comic Book Resources, which is where the column used to be. Comic Book Resources now is utterly unreadable. And my favorite comic blog of all time, Comics Should Be Good, has now been folded into where the articles are just articles on the website. And they're next to impossible to find. And what I do, I am Facebook friends with the guy who ran that blog.
Mm-hmm.
And he will post when hey, I got a new article up. I'll click on it and read it from that, because otherwise it's impossible to find. The comic book news websites are in terrible shape right now.
Oh, you know, and the fact that all I want to do is just read the Tilting at Windmills, yet I can't find it. And my attitude is, no, forget it. I got other things I can do.
But he...
Like this here podcast.
Yes. But one of the things that... is talked about in the column is what is known as the long tail. And Joe and I have talked about the long tail before, but for people who don't understand that term...
Or remember it, like me.
What it is in book sales, what they call the long tail is you're going to have a lot of stuff that sells this month, and it may not sell in 3 or 4 months. But as you go down the line of books... You have stuff that sells routinely over the year, maybe 3 or 4 copies per bookstore. when I worked at Schindler's, we had trade paperbacks, and one of the things is we always had to have all of Hunter S. Thompson's books. They're not going to sell out every week, but every month you're going to look and at least one or two of them will be gone. We had a copy of The Necronomicon. It's not going to sell every week, but every month or so you're going to sell one or two of them. You just restock. And what is talked about in the column is how the long tail is different from what was imagined. And what I thought we could talk about is how graphic novels were a decade ago, 20 years ago, and 30 years ago.
Barely exist 30 years ago. 20 years ago, only smart shops had them. 10 years ago, they were probably a little more mainstream. There, that was easy. Next topic.
But the other thing about 30 years ago, they were rare, and people still didn't quite know how to deal with them in the comic industry. Marvel was doing graphic novels, but they were the oversized, like, European album comics. They weren't trade paperbacks. They were, a lot of people just said they were glorified annuals. They were bigger. They were 48 to 80 pages. And when DC put out the trade paperbacks of Dark Knight and Watchmen, they were kind of new ideas. And fans treated them like collectibles when they came out, because that's how fans saw comics. Joe, do you remember what the first trade paperback you bought was?
I think it was Will Eisner's A Contract with God. At least one that counted itself as a graphic novel. Before that, there were the origin books that Marvel did.
Yep.
I didn't buy them new. I bought them used as collectibles. But yeah, it was Will Eisner.
I remember getting the origins of Marvel Comics for Christmas and then Son of Origins the next year. And I actually talked on the solo podcast about how when we moved from Smithfield to Fairview, I packed away my copy of Origins of Marvel Comics, and when we got to the new house, I couldn't find it. And for years, I looked for that thing, and I still think it's in a box that was shoved in the attic by accident, but I wasn't allowed in the attic because it's more just a crawl space. But the ones I remember buying first were The Power of Iron Man and The Phoenix Saga. And they didn't have them at the comic shop. I had to buy them at Walden Books. Do you remember those books, Joe?
Walden Books or the books?
Those two trade paperbacks that Marvel put out of those two stories.
I remember seeing the ads for them, but I don't think I actually bought them.
I did, and I remember I was in junior college, and I actually wrote an essay about the Power of Iron Man book, about how underneath all the superhero stuff, there was a realistic depiction of alcoholism. And it's junior college, so they were, like, impressed that I was able to put sentences together that made sense. But I remember in the mid-80s, when those books came out, I started at Schindler's, and if a trade paperback came out, it was kind of rare. To the point where when Legends of the Dark Knight started, remember, it was always five-part stories, because the pitch they made to retailers was, there will be five-part stories, and then they'll be collected in trade paperbacks so that you have more trade paperbacks that will sell long-term in your store. And when you bought Hot Comics, it was 92, near the end of 1992, did they even have a lot of trade paperbacks in the shop at that point?
Just the ones we talked about, you know, stuff reprinting, stuff from the 80s and things like that. Nothing too extravagant. I mean, really, I really started to pick up on graphic novels when I went from the 1,000 to the 3,000 foot store, where I made the whole back wall graphic novels. And we put things there like comic strips. I had all the Masterworks, the showcases. No, they weren't show. What? Archives. Is that what they call it? DC Archives?
Yep.
And then the EC reprints, the big ones, a lot of them that you ended up buying.
No, I only bought two of those EC box sets from you. All the others I bought when I worked at Schindler's. In 96, they put out the pre-trend stuff. There were two box sets. I bought both those from you. And then at your tiny shop, the last shop, they finally put out the Picto Fiction, and I was able to get those from you. But all the others I bought when I worked at Schindler's, because I got them at I got them at cost.
Cool.
Before Schindler said, "Hey, we can make money off our employees."
Yeah, see, a lot of them. I don't remember how we did graphic novels before. I think we might have had just a book stand and just shoved them in spine. But when I was able to get the back room, there was a store up in Forest Lake that had decided to close. The guy who ran it actually did construction, and he, you know, if you work construction, you know, he's made plenty of his money doing construction. The comic shop / coffee shop was just something for him to play with in the meantime. And he had gotten his stuff from Barnes & Noble when they decided to get rid of their wood shelving and go with the tin shelving. And so he picked up a lot of his stuff then. And when he closed, I picked up a whole back row. I think I had an original comic rack that St. Paul Comics had. That was where Pat and I used to buy our comics back when we were young. And so it was kind of like I had a false wall, and then behind that's where I threw all the other stuff. And boy, we filled that thing. I just remember going through Star Wars books, Preacher, Sandman. There were Kingdom Come, Marvel, Watchmen, of course. You could always tell when somebody started one, because one would disappear one week and then a number two and then number three. And yeah, I had to keep on top of it, because if I was out of stock, people would go over to the source, and vice versa. Source was out of stock, they'd come over to me. There was no, "Hey, I can order it for you." No, no, I'll just keep looking around. And this was before the big change, and at the time big change was Barnes & Noble and Borders started even carrying graphic novels. And now, of course, you can go and pretty much find graphic novels there. There's no real rhyme or reason to any of them, but you can be damn sure they got Walking Dead, and they probably still have plenty of manga there, too.
One of the things that I remember from 20 years ago was that really the only consistent trade paperbacks that came out were from Vertigo. Vertigo, if a series or a miniseries came out, it was put in a trade, and it was started by Sandman. Marvel was still kind of only the big stories got trades, or they would put out, like, weird collections where the stories were themed. And the one I remember most was, like, Spider-Man Strange Encounters, which is like, okay, here's Spider-Man teaming up with Howard the Duck, and Spider-Man teaming up with Man-Thing, and Spider-Man teaming up with the Werewolf, and, you know, so Marvel wasn't doing a lot of the, okay, this comic's coming out, and as each story comes out, it'll be put in a trade. They were still on the soap opera, to the point where, and I've told this story before, when the first X-Men movie came out, this is the year 2000, first X-Men movie comes out, Marvel did what they had done with some of their other stuff, where, oh, okay, here's three tie-in comics and an adaptation of the movie. And sales didn't jump for the X-Men books, and the editor-in-chief of Marvel was brought before the board, and the first thing they said was, "Well, what's your graphic novel plan for the X-Men movie?" "Oh, we don't have one." "What do you mean you don't have one? When a Batman movie comes out, DC has this and this and this and this and this. You know, they've got, you know, Mr. Freeze collection and a Catwoman collection and then another Batman collection of things that are related. What are you doing with the X-Men?" "Oh, that's not how we do it. We sell individual issues, and the stories don't lend themselves to trades well." And then Joe Quesada was made editor-in-chief of Marvel. And I still remember in the 90s, DC ruled the trade paperbacks. They were by far beating Marvel in that market, to the point where DC was outselling them 2-1. And I know DC had huge warehouse space because they kept all of the archives in print. They kept most of the they kept most of the Vertigo stuff in print. And they were moving toward putting their miniseries and their regular series into trade paperbacks. Not all of them. But a lot of the stuff, and whenever there was a big story, like, oh, it's Emerald Dawn, all right, it's going to be a trade paperback. Ooh, it's Nightfall, it's going to be a trade paperback. Death of Superman, going to be a paperback. And I think pretty much by the year 2000, 2001, it hit the point where everything was going to be collected in a trade at Marvel and DC. And 10 years ago, everything was being written for the trade at Marvel and mostly at DC, but one of the things we learned is that a lot of that stuff does not go into the long tail. It almost sells like the weekly comics. Joel, I'll give you an example. Do you remember the Ms. Marvel series with Carol Danvers in the 2000s?
No.
It tied in with every one of the event stories. So whenever there was an event story, oh, here's the Ms. Marvel trade that ties in with that. It lasted 50 issues. All of them came out as trade paperbacks. They went out of print and nobody cared.
And now, Marvel always had that problem. Everything they had would just go out of print. It used to drive the retailers nuts, especially when you had Volume 1, Volume 2, and Volume 5 and 6, and nothing in between.
And I think a lot of it is they've just said, well, you know, after they sell out, nobody really cares. Nobody
and also remember, they were bankrupt, too. I mean,
yeah.
they were more worried about what kind of stock options Perlman could, you know, scrape out of Marvel than whether or not their stock was going on.
And until, like, 2001, they weren't allowed to keep stuff in print. It's once it sells out, okay, it's out. But I think one of the things that Brian Hibbs talks about is that you've got these Marvel and DC books that he'll have on the shelf, and if it's for a series that's just kind of a midland series that doesn't have a huge fan base, he'll have those trade paperbacks on his shelf for 2, 3, 4 years, and nobody will touch them. Whereas some of the stuff that doesn't appeal to the regular comic buyers, like the new Ms. Marvel series, Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, Runaways, that stuff is becoming part of the long tail because it's selling to people who come into comic shops very infrequently. They're not the every Wednesday people. Now, when you had the second shop, when you ordered trade paperbacks, did you order them the way you ordered every comic, or did you think of, okay, I'm going to buy, people have ordered two, but I know that this is going to sell over time, so I'll order five. Or was it, they ordered two, I'll order one extra?
Nope, wasn't even that. I would order it. If it was a popular series, I'd order maybe one for the shelf. I always kept the perennials in stock. Again, you know, the ones I named off, Watchmen, Preacher, whatever.
Walking Dead.
90% of the books we had on the shelves were books I ordered for my own, and I left them there until I was ready to read them. If they sold, I'd reorder them. If not, eventually they'd come home with me.
And what was your percentage of sales of trade paperbacks and such?
I don't recall in the little shop. I know in the big shop they were about 10% of overall sales. The difference being is I think in terms of dollar revenues, they probably drove a little bit more, and definitely in profits. I talked to this about the shirts and stoves, which is a theory of retail I got from one of my store managers when I worked at Sears. He says, you know, why does Sears sell both? Well, we sell hundreds of shirts at maybe $5 a piece, whereas we sell one stove and make maybe $500. So that was kind of how I looked at it, you know, the shirts being the comic books themselves and then the stoves being the graphic novels, especially when it came to trying to keep Masterworks or some of the bigger hardcovers in stock, because those are the type of books guys would come by, and if I had them, they would buy them, but they very rarely would want to order them. And I think that's even more acute now, because if I don't have something, more than likely somebody's going to go to Amazon or eBay and buy it. And they might even just go there to begin with, because a lot of times they're selling these books or somebody is, cheaper than the retailer store can get them. You know, I do that myself. I see new books out, or I see a book that I want, like the I talk about the Frank Miller books. That,
what the hell is wrong with you?
What? What's that? I didn't do it.
What the hell is wrong with you?
We don't have time to get into everything, dear.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't.
No, Corey doesn't.
Corey doesn't know?
No, he doesn't know.
Is wearing a shirt.
Facebook and take a look at the most ridiculous I voted picture ever that needs to be taken down.
People, that is how you get busted in a marriage. Do we do a sidebar here for a minute?
Sure.
Okay, folks, if you go to my Facebook page, I put up a very stunning picture of myself stylishly showing up two I voted stickers. Did you happen to see that one, Corey?
But wait, yes, I did.
Okay. Enough said. It's not going anywhere, so you can go see it if you want. But apparently, even though this picture has been up as we podcast for the last 9 hours, my lovely wife just saw it.
Because she's got a life and doesn't spend all day on Facebook.
No, I don't think so. You should have seen. There was a really cool picture of her work because women were just standing around the hall, and somebody noticed they were all wearing pantsuits. So they got about 25 to 30 women outside of City Hall and took a picture of them all wearing pantsuits, which I thought was kind of cool. And the mayor was going to come along, but he didn't wear his pantsuits that day, so they wouldn't let him. So anyways, that is how I spend my time on my day off. And we'll actually talk about that a little bit more when we get to geeking. But
I don't have days off.
To steal one from Peter David, we digressed.
Yes, we digressed.
Big time.
I think one of the things you're going to see over the next few years with trade paperbacks is for kind of your midline Marvel and DC book, they're going to become like the weekly comic dump. Okay, here's the new Deathstroke trade paperback.
Well, they're already there. I mean, back when I was trying to get the New Titans because the Prez stuff, they did volume one, and I totally brain farted on two and three because I think I wanted to see volume one first. But I ordered volume four, and when I went to get volumes two and three, could not find them at any of the local comic stores. I ended up ordering them online, and I mean, I bought them from another comic store that came out of Vegas. Matter of fact, the one I visited when I was out there. So it was kind of cool. But a lot of times, you know, like I was talking about before, I was so rudely interrupted. You know, I was trying to get the smaller books, and, you know, I'd go to the source, I'd see what they have. I get 10% off there, which is pretty good. And then when the con hit, I was able to hit 30% off because they had a 20% off coupon. They give you another 10% if you have their card with them. So 30% off is pretty good. I mean, that's equal to eBay. Plus, you got to look shipping charges, things like that. A lot of times Amazon doesn't have it. So, you know, people are doing that. They'll come in, they'll check out the price, and then they'll look on Amazon, mostly, not probably eBay as much, and whoever's got it cheaper has it. To me, what would be more interesting is if you were a comic store and you had somebody come up to you and say, hey, you have this book at $20, I can get it for $14 on eBay, would you match that price? Would you or wouldn't you? I think I would be prone to do it on occasion because we order graphic novels, or I should say retailers, order graphic novels pretty much at the same discount they get their comics at. Sometimes more if there's a special deal attached to them. So, but I don't know. Is that something you think would be viable, Corey, or is that you're just giving away the baby with the bathwater?
I don't know if comic shops are big enough business to do that because remember, Best Buy, Target, and places like that refused to price match Amazon until it got ugly for Best Buy, at least, and now they do it, they're not happy about it, and you got to jump through some hoops, but they will match the Amazon price. Target, I don't know if they do price matching anymore. I remember they used to be big on price matching, and then once people started finding out about it and coming in, it was sometime in the 90s. They quit doing price matching.
Yeah.
And now and they kind of do it, but it's convoluted and they don't talk about it, and not all the register people know they do it.
Yeah, that's why I'd be curious if a shop would do it. I know when I did my big store, I would, people would ask, you know, are you doing this? And I said, well, no, I don't do that because it messes up our account books. And it did. Again, I didn't have the fancy computer that, you know, okay, we sold this one, book A, for full price, this one at 10%, this one at 30%. I had to kind of go off, okay, I sold 1,000 comics, my discount was 50%, I gave away 10, therefore I figure maybe out of every dollar I sold, I made 40 cents. So that's how I kind of loosely figure out the profits. And I get to the accountant, you know, and he'd figure out more, because out of that 40 cents, you know, that's what would pay off the bills, you know, all the other stuff that you need for a shop. The hard part is it's kind of like, well, are you better off having the $13 or waiting till you hit the hit like a sale? Because that's what I always tell people. So, you know, I'm going to have a sale a couple times a year if you want to get on the list. That's when you'll really, you know, save the big money, because that's when I and Corey can attest, I did some really wild sales. But it's kind of an interesting thought, and I don't know. I'd have to talk to some of my retailer friends. You know, would they be more prone to say, yeah, I'd rather not lose the sale, or just, well, you know, I got to stay in business. I can't afford to match Amazon price, which could be why, you know, more and more comic stores I hear of are going under.
And I think the other thing is, you're with Amazon and even DCBS Online, they're dealing with the economy of scale. You know, while a comic shop can be, okay, I'm going to order, you know, what was a typical week at the big shop? What was your typical bill at Diamond?
About 10 grand.
A week?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you're ordering 10 grand.
About $1,000 at the small shop.
Well, you're ordering 10 grand. Mm-hmm. Amazon is probably ordering 400 to 500 grand of trade paperbacks a week for their warehouse.
And, you know, the other thing, too, and this is what's surprising. Well, two quick stories surprising. Nick used to tell me that Diamond loved me because I ordered tons of toys. And, you know, again, economy of scale, there's no way a single shop is going to order tons of toys. I did. I've talked in the past, you know, I'd order 20 boxes of Spawn toys and have 15 of them sold. But towards the end of Hot Comics, as I had it, I didn't order near that many. I didn't order hardly any toys for Crazy. But again, Hot Comics was a big toy account for Diamond. When I opened up Crazy Comics, I had about $1,000 of pre-orders. So I forget what my total bill was. I mean, these are people, and I'm talking 50 of you that I absolutely love, that when Christie closed her shop, they came to Crazy Comics and said, I will buy comics from you. So when I turned in my order to Diamond, I got a call back from the rep going, are you sure about this? And I said, yeah, I'm ordering pretty tight. He says, yeah, but you're ordering an awful lot for a store just opening. And that made my brain just kind of implode. And I told the guy, well, you know, 90% of this is pre-orders. I'm not ordering a lot for the shelf, at least not yet. At least that wasn't the game plan when I had the original Crazy Comics.
So, but I don't think a shop could do it. They don't have the economy of scale. Even a big shop like The Source. And there aren't a lot of chains. You know, The Source has two shops. Hot Comics has two shops, well, three shops, but they're not a chain, because aren't each store owned by someone different?
No.
They've all been bought by the same person?
Yeah, a single owner owns that. So there you get an economy of scale, like Corey talked about on Shinders. Shinders got the biggest discount, and they got a lot of perks from Cap City, because they were essentially the giant Cap City chain.
They had 13 shops.
Diamond, and they ordered as one. Diamond would not come into the Twin Cities market unless they could get Schindler's to order with them, and Schindler's didn't because there was no real reason for them to.
Right. But I think trade paperbacks, in a lot of ways, the market is shifting, and one of the things that's shifting the market is DC, Image, Dark Horse, these other places are moving outside of comic shops. They're moving to libraries. They're moving to the Scholastic book clubs. They're moving, you know, a lot of stuff on Amazon. Every few weeks, something pops up on one of the comic news things that I follow, which is more about, you know, how to buy your comics, where, oh, Amazon's got this omnibus that's coming out next June, and they've got it at this ridiculously low price. Oh, order it there. One of the things that showed up today, I got home, there is my Lone Wolf and Cub DVD set from Criterion, which normally sells for $100. Amazon, for a week, when they first put it up, had it for $40.
And that could be why I keep seeing on my Facebook feed Criterion sets at Barnes & Noble at 50% off all the time.
Well, Criterion's doing their biannual sale. They always do a sale at Barnes & Noble. And then on their website, they have what are known as flash sales every so often, where for one day, everything's 50% off. Of course, when we get to geeking, I'll explain why I don't need to buy as many Criterion DVDs anymore. But one of the things that I'm learning in my own buying habits is anymore, I moved to trade paperbacks, and now I'm moving to hardcovers for the stuff I want to read over and over and over again. But for things like, you know, your run-of-the-mill Marvel book, Marvel Unlimited's good enough for me. I'm fine. I'm good with that.
Yeah, you know, and that's something I'll even talk about again when we get to geeking, because I want to read it. I'm not collecting anymore. I mean, that kind of left me when my daughter was born. But, you know, if I read something or if I see a movie and I really like it, that's when I want to probably get a copy to watch forever and ever. You know, that's why I'm not so keen to run out and grab a copy of Ant-Man, even though I've never seen it. Although I may, if they show up cheaper, and again, this is something about videos that drive me crazy, you know, why should I pay $29.99 now when by Christmas time it'll be $19.99, and next year Christmas it'll be $9.99, and by then I could probably find it used on eBay or half-price books or anywhere else. I mean, granted, that doesn't happen too often with comics, but you know, if something does sell out, there will probably be a second, third, fourth print. There will be a graphic novel. Hey, we've just gone round circle because, at least for Marvel, it'll be on Marvel Unlimited.
Well, you know who's not going to be on Marvel Unlimited?
Trump or Hillary?
These guys, our sponsors.
This here podcast is sponsored by DreamHost.com. DreamHost.com is the best bar none web host in the whole known universe. I know because I've been using it for over 12 years. Anytime I've had a problem, they've been able to help me fix it. And let's face it, I'm not that bright when it comes to fixing crap that's wrong on my computer or anybody else's computer or the internet. DreamHost.com. They have a discount. That's right. If you go to DreamHost.com, put in the code CRAZY, you get $20 off your first year of web hosting. Now, the beautiful thing about DreamHost.com is you can set up whatever you want. They have downloadable software for you to set up a WordPress blog, like we use for the podcast. You can also use a WordPress blog to start a web strip, to start a blog, to do any sort of thing you want. If you want to do a store, they have software for that, and they will help you get it set up. DreamHost.com, the best damn web host in the whole known universe.
And after we do the sponsors, we ask Joe what's going on the eBays, Joe?
Well, we could talk about the things I purchased, such as the Everyday Carry Zombie 3-Day Survival Data Preparedness Kit, or my, I talked about it last week, the Daredevil Born Again Marvel graphic novel, which I ordered and hasn't arrived yet. Or I could talk about the Bill the Cat plush stuffed toy that is sitting now proudly above me. I could talk about the Opus, the Complete Library Sundays IDW Comics hardcover that I got. So now my collection is complete. Or I could ask the Strode.
Ooh. I'm ready.
Corey, what do you know about 75 years of DC Comics, The Art of Modern Mythmaking by Paul Levitz?
It was a book that he worked on after he stepped down from... His position was always weird, but he was kind of the editor-in-chief. He then wrote that book. He also wrote a Will Eisner book that came out. But it's a big coffee table book. It's, what, a $200 book?
Yep. And I just sold my copy on eBay's.
Oh, wow. How much did you sell it for?
It went up sold really quickly. I pretty much sold it. I was the cheapest guy on eBay because that's what I did. About $140, which is about 10% above cost. So, again, I'm just trying to get rid of this stuff, and I just put it up, and somebody bought it, and I'm looking forward to it because she said that it's going as a Christmas gift. So
that's cool.
I told her, drop me a note when her husband's eyes bug out. Now, what's the number one thing, Corey? You have a whole pile of comics on eBay, and you're going to sell them. What's the number one thing you do before you set a price on it?
Look and see what other people are selling it for.
So I done did that. Corey, on our second Ask the Strode, tell me about Vic in Blood, The Chronicles of a Boy and His Dog.
That is based on a pair of short stories by Harlan Ellison, A Boy and His Dog, and then there was a second story he wrote called Blood's a Rover. It's set post-apocalypse. It's the story of a young man and his telepathic dog. It was made into a movie in the 70s, which is a shockingly well-adapted version of the story.
It is. I actually saw it at one of those revival houses, and I believe it has, who's that from Miami Vice?
Doc Johnson.
Yeah.
The only thing that I have issue with, and Harlan Ellison took some issue with as well, is at the end of the twist end is treated for humor, whereas in his story it's treated as horror. And one of the reasons he wrote Blood's a Rover was to show just how horrific that ending was. In the 80s, Jan Stran and Richard Corbin did an adaptation of it that was then put into a, sounds like a limited hardcover. I just remember the comics coming out. And it was, I was not, because I wasn't reading heavy metal, I didn't know a lot about Corbin. And I didn't read a lot of his underground stuff, but by this time in the late 80s, Corbin was one of those guys who, if he put out a comic, I was going to buy it. I love his art. And sounds like you had a limited version of that.
I did. I found this limited version by NBM, and it's got a Tipton plate. They made 1,000 of them, and Harlan Ellison and Richard Corbin both signed it. And so I got it. I put it aside. I'm looking on eBay, and I discover there is one copy on eBay for $999.
Oh, man!
Now, I've had this happen before when I did that with the Eternals hardcover, and you've talked in the past about Omnibus and Masterworks and Essentials going out of print for crazy prices. So I went over to Amazon just to double check. Their price? A mere $1,700.
Oh,
and I happen to have one here. Hang on, I'm going to put on my rubber gloves and just smell that rich fake leather. Ah. So I'll be putting one on eBay.
And what are you starting the bidding at, sir?
Well, let's take a peek here because I just want to do a quick double check. Pick and Blood. And, of course, if you don't have $1,000 to buy it, you can buy the book. There seems to be plenty of them on the eBays. Let's see. Oh, it looks like, oh, check this out. One has just showed up for $150 in auction. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a watch on that, not only to see when it sells, and we'll find out in 4 days or by the next podcast how it sells, but also that'll give me an idea of what it actually theoretically could go for. Here's somebody who's got one for $4,000. Here's one, probably the same guy from Amazon, for $1,700. And as I'm looking down, I'm trying to find the guy who had it at $1,000. Well, he's either repriced his or sold it. I didn't put a watch on his. So that's kind of what I would do. Being that I have the lowest one in town, not counting the auction, I will probably put it at $1,000. And like I'm always want to do, leave it with an offer to see what kind of offer to get. I probably won't put it up, though, until next week once I figure out what this other guy's going to sell for. So that's pretty much how you do it with eBay. I mean, I don't know if there's a guide for this. I don't know if there's any way to, you know, confirm what or if these guys will sell their stuff for. But, you know, there's three up there. And, of course, by the time the podcast drop, you won't get a chance to buy the $150 one. So, but mine will be there. So if you do buy it and you let me know, I will probably load the box with more stuff from my vast accumulation of crap than you have in your basement just for buying my $1,000 book. Or if you buy anything, I don't care. I'll just give you a little extra fun for it. KRAYZ, check it out. I put up about 20 things right before the podcast and probably do a little bit more.
Well, after we do the eBay, we get to my favorite part of the show. No, not the end. No, not the section where I take my anti-anxiety pills. No, it's freaking and geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on?
That you didn't do our sponsors?
We did them earlier.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Because usually
paying attention.
Oh, no, I wasn't. Because I was looking at this $1,000 hardcover I got. But I am bummed. I got a couple of freakings. The first one is that, you know, they had this thing called the Nintendo NES Classic. Sold out. And what's weird about it is I knew it was coming, and I was waiting by friends who are really hardcore video gamers. And they're upset because it sold out even before they knew it, and they knew it was coming. And I told them, you know, you got to remember how Nintendo works things like this. They'll leak out just enough before Christmas to get people going insane, and then later they will maybe release more to meet the demand early next year. You know, so you know you can relax; it's going to be fine. But other than that, really, don't have too much to be freaking on. Corey, what are you freaking on?
At work, it is open enrollment, which is our busiest time of the year. And it has been insane to the point where one of the things that I do, I answer the emails and then I take calls. And for every email that I answer, no matter how much, I put a hash mark because I get 10 minutes of credit for that so that they can charge the client for that time. All week, I have been working 10-hour days. Both yesterday and today, my billable time was 14 hours. So I did 14 hours of work in 10 hours.
That's what makes America great.
Somebody's making extra money, and it ain't me. Also, because of the stress of all the calls, they're watching the calls, and I had one where the person called, they were on a terrible connection. They were upset when they called in, and the call kind of spun out of control, and I'm not going to say I lost my temper, but I did get a bit short with them, where I would just give them the answer, and so I had to sit in a room and be told that I need to do a little better at my job. It was not a written warning, but it was a don't do that again or there will be paper involved. And then at the group home, there was a mix-up in medication, and someone had to take the blame for it, and it was me. So at both
it
jobs,
has to be you.
At both jobs, I kind of got called on the carpet,
true.
Which is stressful enough.
Poor Corey is stressed. He's wearing a dress like Maxwell Klinger.
No, I'm wearing a vest. I always
wear a vest. Sorry, I wrote that. He's wearing a vest. Covering his chest, his zipper got caught in his nipples. Is my serenading helping?
No, it's actually making it worse.
Oh, okay.
So
I got that going for me.
And while I'm not sleeping at the group home the last couple of weeks, because of the extra hours at the full-time job and everything else, the house is a goddamn mess.
Which is amazing, because I was there when it wasn't. I couldn't tell the difference.
Bite me, fanboy. hopefully this weekend I am not working at the group home. They are already kind of twisting my arm to do sleeping shifts, but I have to tell them that, yes, I will do the sleeping shift, but I have to leave at 7 a.m. because I am burned out.
I got to sleep in a real bed.
No, it's more I need time at home to put things away. There are stacks and stacks of books in the living room that need to be put away. I have been eating sandwiches all week. I've had it with sandwiches. So hopefully that'll calm down a little bit. And then the whole computer mess. Monday, the computer froze up. And I said, oh, when it does that, it's because, you know, the Firefox is doing this and this is doing that. I'll just shut it down and start it up again. So I had it, and it shut down, and it never started up again. So we tried to do the podcast with the laptop, and Skype kept dropping. And just dropping out of the blue. Not just dropping the call, but shutting down. And eventually I found out, no, it's because Windows was trying to update while we were recording the podcast. And last night I became my father's son. Because my father, if something wouldn't work, he would just go to the store and buy a new one, and he'd give up and just go buy a new one, because it's a waste of time to keep messing with something after you've hit a frustration level. And after Joe and I kept trying, and then I said, yep, the laptop Windows is updating. We're not recording tonight. Next thing you knew, I was calling Joe going, by the way, I'm in the parking lot buying a new computer.
By that time, I had gone to sleep, so...
So the new computer's recording, everything looks groovy.
Feeling groovy!
And the cool thing is, usually when you have to buy a new computer, it's because the hard drive crashes. This one, the hard drive didn't crash. I'm pretty sure it was the power source, which I've replaced twice. The computer's 8 years old. It's like, nah, it's time to upgrade. I've been working constantly. I've got a whole bunch of money in the bank. Let's just upgrade. Let's buy a computer from this decade. And comic-wise, I haven't read a whole lot, and I'm freaking on that. Joe, what are you geeking on? What are you loving?
Well, since I can't buy myself a Nintendo NES Classic, I bought myself the Lego Yellow Submarine. The Yellow Submarine. Haven't opened it yet, but I got it. So I was pretty happy with that. It's amazing, because when it first came out on November 1st, I was out looking for it. I dropped Holly at school. Went to Target, no luck. With Toys R Us, no luck. I said, screw it. I am going to the Lego store at Mall of America. I called them. They said they had plenty. I ran down and got it. Did not have enough money to buy two, but, I want to, you know, one to keep, one to open with. So, you know, because I'm that type of guy. Ah, jeez, just like X Factor 1 all over again. As far as
Wait. There were a whole bunch of trading cards in the damn Lego box?
Probably X-Force. I don't know. X-something. Marks the spot. Speaking of reading, I went to the library, and another cool way to read books, I read Ms. Marvel, volumes 1 through 4.
The new version.
Yep, I would have, and actually 4 ends right where Civil War starts, and it was kind of poignant where it did end it.
Not Civil War, Secret War.
It's all civil, though. The Civil War is not secret, but everything else was. So it ends in the white fade out, and I'm not sure if the library has other copies. I'll probably go back and check them out. I enjoyed this book thoroughly. It's a fantastic book. I can understand why Marvel did it. I can understand why kids would really be excited about it. While I was there, I did feel a little guilty because there were kids reading other volumes, and I sniped away with volumes 1 through 4. So I read them as fast as I could and returned them like the next day. That's how good it was. Also from the library, I picked up Tim Conway, What's So Funny, My Humorous Life, co-written with Jane Scowell. Tim Conway, again, a celebrity that I love. I remember watching him on the Carol Burnett show. When I need a good pick-me-up, I'll go look at some of the stuff he did on that same show. You know, he always loved to just crack up Harvey. Just fun to read. Tim's a guy, much like myself, that if I can go for the laugh, I will. Hence point the Facebook picture I got chewed out about. So, you know, check that out. I mean, I know we got a few days before this here podcast drops, but it should still be up there. So check it out. And, yes, it did hurt getting those stickers off. I was sick last Friday. I was able to do a little bit of eBay, but I also updated one of my Facebook's pages, the Supergirl art that I collect. I included a lot of the artwork, including the one I got from, I can't remember his name, Norm from the MCBA Fall Con. And if you're just looking to see my four-color crush, you know, just my Facebook page is Joe Ryder. I got everything public. I don't put anything online that's secret. At least nothing that you're aware of. So, and if you're a friend of the show, you can either like us either on our Facebook page or like me or Corey, whatever. Send me a quick note letting me know you are a fan of the show, because more than likely, if you do send it out of the blue and I don't recognize you, or you're not a, you know, well-built blonde redhead or brunette, male or female, it's 21st century, you know, I tend to ignore it. So that could be cool. The last thing I'm reading, of course, is Bloom County Volume 3. I just finished it. And I'll be waiting in the volume 4. I just love rereading it. It's just fun stuff. A lot of things I don't remember from the original run. Television-wise, I discovered a series that a lot of people have been recommending. And since Doctor Strange seemed to be the hit movie, this one is called Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. And it's about... Oh, shoot. Hang on. I'm not even going to try to... screw this one up. I'll just read it from this here. What do they call it? The interwebs here?
Yes. The
okay, I'll just read it right.
Wires we call the internets.
So originally it was a novel by British writer Susanna Clarke, and it's a television show that is currently on. I don't know if the Netflix one is the British version. Let me type a little further here. But the first episode was really interesting. It's basically, it's kind of like an alternative history, 19th century England around the time of the Napoleonic Wars, based on the premise that magic once existed in England and is returned in two men, Gilbert Norrell and Jonathan Strange. And the first episode kind of sets up how these two approach magic. It kind of drops that they may end up being foes, not necessarily friends. And if the series on Netflix, as I type away here on what do we call it? The Crazy 8000?
The Creatron 2000.
Right, let's see if Netflix... you know, I'm beginning to think it is the same series. Yep. So, yeah, I think it is. It's also on DVD if you're not like me and want to, you know, just want to sit down and look at it all. But based on the first episode, I really enjoyed it, so I definitely recommend it. Corey, what are you geeking on? What's got you happier than a new person with a new computer?
The new computer I'm really geeking on, really enjoy it. I was up late last night, which I shouldn't have done, just tweaking it and downloading stuff. One of the things with the new computer you can do is there's a blog I enjoy called Lifehacker, and they have, here are the essential programs that you need for a new computer. And it's all free stuff, and it's like... your productivity stuff and open office and everything like that. And they've actually got a site where you could go, just click on all the stuff you want and it'll just download in one big bundle. And then you open it up and it all installs. So that's what my computer did today, as well as updating and doing all of that. TV wise, what little time I had, I was watching TV. I got hooked on the new sitcom called The Good Place, which was created by the same people who created Parks and Recreation. It's about a woman who dies and goes to The Good Place.
She was not supposed to go to The Good Place. She was supposed to go to The Bad Place.
Dun, dun, dun.
And when I watched the pilot, I thought it was going to be about her learning how to be a better person. And that's how it started, but the story has moved forward quite a lot. And really, a lot of sitcoms, it's like, okay, here's our situation, and we're going to make jokes based on the situation. You don't really count on the story moving forward a lot. In this one, it's moving forward at a pretty rapid pace. They have 13-episode seasons. It has not been renewed yet, but it probably will be. So the creators probably know, okay, we're going to get renewed, so
we can be cocky about it.
Well, the other thing is, if you know you're not going to get renewed, it's like, okay, let's hurry up to the finale. But since they know they're going to get renewed, I'm wondering, it's like, wow, what are they going to go with this? So I like that. The new season of Walking Dead, we're 3 episodes in, and I love the fact that all the people who said, oh, I watched the season premiere, and I'm never watching it again, and ratings have stayed pretty much the same. So it's a lot like Spider-Man when everybody said, oh, I'm not buying Spider-Man, and they kept buying Spider-Man. So, you know,
I did read an interesting article about how there was this Marine guy talking about, you know, for guys who are supposedly military and police trained, they're really doing dumbass shit.
The only one with any police training is Rick Grimes, though. Everybody else is just regular folk, and
He might as well not even have done any training because he's been stupid from day one. But no. I don't want to rain on your parade. We'll save that for another show.
One of the things that I like about it is that Rick was a small town cop. And they've sort of hinted that he may not have been. It's not that he was a dirty cop, but he may not have been, you know, the best at his job. He was just kind of mediocre.
Shane covered his ass a lot.
Yeah. So, you know, it's hard to tell. But the new season's really good. I'm enjoying it as well. I am almost done with The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt on Netflix. Hopefully this weekend I will get to finish that and then wait for the new season. Comic-wise, the only thing I've really read, I'm still going through the Grant Morrison Batman.
Batman.
And I'm now up to the Battle for the Cowl, which is Batman's trapped back in time. And
Batman, wait, Battle for the Cowl? Bat Cowl?
Bat Cow's later.
Oh, got me all excited.
But this is when Bruce Wayne is gone and Dick Grayson takes up the mantle of Batman. And this is not the first time it's happened, but I like it a whole lot more than the whole Nightfall thing. Because Nightfall was very much, okay, we need to prove why Bruce Wayne needs to be Batman. We're going to have somebody else take over being Batman, and he's an asshole. And eventually he's defeated, and he goes back to be Azrael, and then we get Dick Grayson as Batman for a month. And instead with this, it's a different approach. It's Batman is gone, but we've learned that he has trained Dick Grayson and the others so that they can function without him. It's much more forward-thinking. It's much more in Grant Morrison's mindset of Batman plans for every eventuality. One of those eventualities is that he's not going to be around anymore. And in my mind, it makes Batman a richer character than back in the 90s when it's, well, if Batman's gone, some asshole's going to take over and he'll ruin everything. So really loving it, especially since this is my second read. I'm kind of taking my time with it, and I don't need to, what's going to happen next? It's more like the second time you read a novel, you can kind of luxuriate in a little more. And really, those are the things I'm geeking on. Joe, you had a big announcement.
I do.
So let me sit down.
Because well, it's not that big.
Your big announcements always scare me.
It's not really going to affect you that much. No, my wife and I have decided we're going to be working a little harder on getting some of our long-term debt paid off, which I can accredit to Mr. Strode, because every time he talked about getting his long-term debt paid off, I was like, dang, that actually sounds pretty good. So I will probably be stop buying new comics from here on out. A lot of it, too, I realize I can probably pick up. I mean, I did buy the special on Marvel Unlimited where for $60 I got a whole year. Again, I've been going to the library. I've got a ton of crap that I've never read, and it's become apparent as I'm digging through comics that I could just read what I have now and probably be, you know, have another 5-6 years of stuff. Plus, it also occurred to me that there's a lot of things that I've just let piled up and never read. And I'm like, why am I paying money for this stuff? I can pick it up later or, like my partner Pat, pick it up not at all. And I say that then, of course, in this month's previews, there's about 5 graphic novels I want to buy. So.
And anyway, the month's omnibus.
Oh, I know. They're just killing me. So, but I'm just looking, so I'll probably be talking less and less about new comics and just more and more about some of the stuff I've enjoyed in the past. I mean, have I gone on enough about Frank Miller's Daredevil?
No.
Okay, well, they probably never can, because, again, I got that coming, and I still don't have Daredevil Man Without Fear miniseries, or if I do, I haven't found it yet. So, of course, if you're a comic creator and want to send me your book to review, hey, Corey and I, we're not opposed to reviewing comics. And you can, if I think it's in our sponsorship, how to get a hold of us. So we could do that too.
Yeah.
Which would be nice.
Well, kids, believe it or not, you've listened to us blather on for an hour and a half about funny books. And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Joe?
I know my cause of death. I'm going to lay down the boogie and play that funky music till I die. Hit my music!
Funk is on a roll.